Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Forsyth. Well, it's 100 years since some women got the right to vote in Britain. Katie, how's Theresa May marking that?
She's been marking the occasion with a few speeches and also an appearance on Women's Hour, where she spoke about suffragettes and the suffragists and basically about how much Parliament has changed. And she actually sounded very relaxed. It was almost a topic that she wanted to talk on or speak on, which I think is quite rare for her, especially nowadays. We know she's quite a brittle media performance normally.
And actually, her work to get more women MPs into the Conservative Party is something that gained her huge credit during the leadership contest, wasn't it? So I can imagine that she'd be quite comfortable about talking about that rather than what happened next.
Yeah, exactly. And if you look at Women to Win, she is a co-founder of that group, and that is a group the kind of one of the main vehicles by which lots of female MPs have become MPs for the Conservative Party. And you speak to even, you know, female MPs from the class of 17, and they still are quite heavily involved in these events because it's where they get a lot of their support, even once they're elected, for the campaigns. And they say Theresa May rarely misses one. She still goes to them. And if anything, I think there is an appetite within the party, especially, for her to talk more about this and the things she does, because often, like, you know, you have done the work, make more of it.
James, she has made some policy proposals today, particularly about the intimidation of MPs. What do you make of those?
I mean, there is a clear problem that politics has got nastier in recent years. There is more abuse, particularly online, and a disproportionate amount of that abuse seems to fall on female candidates and female MPs. It was obviously also a female MP who was murdered for her political beliefs. So Theresa May is kind of proposing a clampdown on that. I think you have to be very careful with new laws to deal with this kind of thing. And I am slightly wary about creating a special protected status for MPs. I think it would actually be much better to issue clearer instructions to the police about enforcing the existing laws than trying to bring in a new law. Because I think the danger of any new law is, where do you define the line at which abuse which kind of robust political debate ends and abuse starts? And quite clearly, under the law right now, if you are threatening to physically harm someone or kill them, you are already committing a criminal offence. I think it would be much better to say, we're not going to accept that kind of thing. And if we find that kind of thing, you know, hang the whatever written up outside people's offices, we're going to treat that as a death threat and do everything we can to pursue the perpetrator, rather than trying to write a new law.
And there's also been, James, a proposal made that suffragettes should be pardoned for the crimes they committed while campaigning for women to get the vote. You have quite strong views on this.
I think it's a bad idea, because I think what's unfair about this proposal is that some of the suffragettes were deliberately trying to get themselves arrested to highlight the injustice of the system. I don't think it's in the gift of the present to go back to the past and deny these people their agency and say, actually, we're going to say what you did was not a crime. I also think, in a way, that we as a society, the fact that we did lock people up for various things is actually quite a good way of drawing us up short and reminding us about injustice and how to deal with it. I think you can't kind of, I think it's dangerously close to trying to kind of go back through history and kind of airbrush out difficult moments and incidents.
Surely this is just a way of saying sorry, isn't it, Katie?
Yeah, I mean, I do think James has a point, though, because if you look at the suffragettes' intentions, you know, the intention was there to break the law. I think you could still pardon them and say that, you know, we have acknowledged as a society that that was completely wrong, we did. I also think, I mean, I've seen there are two arguments against doing the rounds, one of which James has explained very well, and the second seems to be, which I've seen by a few feminists online, is that the government shouldn't do this because the government doesn't represent women's interests. So we're laid to do this, you know, this would be a start. And it's something you hear a bit from people like Harriet Harman when they say Theresa May isn't a sister. And I think that one's just quite tiresome. So I think if the reason that we don't do it is because perhaps, you know, you don't deny them agency, fine. But I think this idea that the government shouldn't do it because you know, they aren't deemed worthy of, you know, recognising what women's rights are because they're not far enough left is ridiculous.
I think there's a distinction between this and the Alan Turing pardon, which is Alan Turing wasn't trying to commit a criminal offence. And so his personal life was not deliberately designed to be a political statement. Lots of the actions by the suffragettes were deliberately designed to be political statements. And the whole point of them was that they were illegal acts and that they were going to get arrested for them and sent to prison for them. So I think that's why I feel so uncomfortable about reaching back into the past and saying, no, what you did was not criminal.
Now, just in case any listeners are starting to complain that we've been talking about women far too much, let's move on to a man, Chris Grayling, who has been talking about trains and some of the wonderful things that are constantly happening with the government's rail franchises. Katie, just explain what's happened.
Yep, so this is East Coast, and basically it turns out that Stagecoach, which is in charge of East Coast, their financial health is not in very good health, basically, and the government didn't realise it was as bad as it was, and that means it has repercussions where the government are not planning to bail out Stagecoach again. If they had, I think it would have been a massive own goal. Labour would have been very quick to go on the attack, but now, if they are to go, it leads to a big problem for the government, which might mean that they have to bring East Coast back into public ownership. If they do that, I mean, I think it's the second time in about 7 years that would have happened. And whatever they do, to be honest, it does play into Labour's argument, which is that privatisation is not working quite soon after Carillion.
James, do you think Chris Grayling is handling these many bumps in the track particularly well?
I think there's a particular problem with the way in which the railways were privatised, which is you bid for the concession to run the line. And what is going on is that companies are overbidding, because they think that ultimately, because the government wants to keep the trains running, that the government will step in and backstop them if they've overbid. And I think that is kind of creating a false market, if you see what I mean. And that's one of the challenges for the government to deal with. I think there's a broader problem in Britain with lots of these. You see it with Carillion, you see it with the trains, you see it with the utility companies. These oligopolies, where it's a very, very few companies can bid for the contracts, and it's not a proper market. And it then ends up not behaving like a proper market, which undermines support for the market. I also think this, that the privatised train companies just handle themselves very badly. I mean, the other day I don't take the train in for, I take the tube, not the train for work, but I booked some train tickets the other day and the train was cancelled, and trying to get a refund, I was kind of close to becoming a Corbynista. The process was so infuriating. And I think there is an interesting thing that there is a kind of question about our railways do seem to be expensive, but without the kind of... They seem to be falling between two stools. They're expensive without being incredibly reliable and good. And I think that is what is creating so much public discomfort about the way the nature of the railways work.
And in terms of public discomfort about services, Katie, there's also been a lot of debate about renationalising the water companies, but we've had a counterpoint to that in the past few days.
Yeah, so the SMF have published basically a report of what they think it would cost to actually nationalise the water as Labour plans to do, the water companies, and it's surprise, a lot more than Labour said it would be. And it's quite an interesting one, because they've come up with this figure, and it basically is a good way of putting it, which is, I think it is double what the current defence budget is, the cost of doing this. But none of this is really coming from the Conservatives. It's coming from a think tank. And I think there's a question when it comes to dealing with the threat of Corbyn and the Darius, which is, what is the most effective way? Because at the moment, the Conservatives are fighting, this idea of, free speech on campus by perhaps putting laws in, which doesn't necessarily go. And also there's the thing where they often talk about Venezuela and say, oh, look, we might become Venezuela.
And actually, the NHS in Wales as well.
NHS in Wales. And I think part of the reason that maybe the Conservatives are slightly shy about going on the economic angle as hard as you might expect them to is because with Brexit, we're constantly saying, oh, don't listen to the experts on this. But ultimately, I imagine the Sums would actually really worry quite a lot if people actually thought about it and what they'd be voting in. But it is interesting that the Conservatives don't seem to use this as the main attack.
James, the Conservatives have a strong rebuttal operation at the moment. If so, what are they doing?
I think they are. I think as Katie says, that there is a kind of confusion about which way they want to attack Jeremy Corbyn, and partly it is because they don't want to look like they're defending unpopular things. I don't think anyone wakes up in the morning and says, thank God for my privatised water company delivering the water to my house. And therefore, you know, they don't want to look like they're defending the fat cats. I think it's quite interesting if you look at what Michael Gove is planning. He's basically written to all the water companies saying, if you carry on using offshore tax havens, I will take legislation to prevent you from doing that. And so I think there is a difficulty here, which is there are clearly problems in this, in the utility sector, with the way that this market is working, the way these companies are behaving. And I think before the Tories, I mean, the more thoughtful Tories accept that, before they can really go on the attack about Corbyn and his plans to nationalise them, they need to get their own house in order and deal with these problems. I think that is one of the reasons why you've seen so much kind of frustration at the kind of drift in government from Tory ministers and MPs. It's because they kind of think, look, we've got to get this stuff sorted so we can really go after Corbyn for the cost of nationalisation and why it's not the most sensible thing. I mean, Liz Truss gave a speech last week. She kind of floated the kind of South Korean model for utility regulation. You know, there are some interesting thoughts out there about how to do this, but the government needs to make a decision on what it wants to do.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Katie. And thank you to Nick Hilton, who produces this podcast. And you can listen to this podcast and all our others on the iTunes store. And if you like this podcast, then you should subscribe to the Evening Blend email as well, which is free and is a roundup and analysis of all the day's political events. Just go to spectator.co.uk/eveningblend. Thanks for listening.